Talk Back with Gary Null, Sundays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Oh, a happy day.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, all health, all healing, and all good nutrition. A little bit at the end on hydrofracking, because a lot of people listening to this program from Pennsylvania, Texas, Oklahoma, California, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut are saying, we're finding out that there's a lot of downside, negatives to gas drilling called hydrofracking, and what is the truth about it? I'll be sharing insights on that. We're going to take on one condition each week in depth. Today, cholesterol. We have so many Americans who have high cholesterol, don't even know it, especially the bad cholesterol, the low-density lipoprotein factors, and also something associated with your cholesterol, the C-reactive protein. In a few moments, Dr. Martin Feldman is going to be on and talk about that, but first, the latest on health and healing, and then a special in-depth report on carnitine and thyroid disease and why hyperthyroid patients need carnitine, from Dr. Julia Scope. And for all of you who want to have better vision, prevent macular degeneration, the number one reason that we go blind, The Role of Good Nutrition by Dr. Dennis Gerhardt. Let's begin. Now, a lot of people throughout the world eat rice and beans. In fact, all over South America, I don't care what country you go to, it's just the various herbs and seasonings and how it's used, but rice and beans are absolutely common. And when you get away from the main cities, most people have organically grown rice and beans. In fact, most people have varieties of rice and varieties of bean that we've never seen in the United States. It was about 10 years ago that I was teaching at the university over on the east side of Manhattan, and I walked up one evening after teaching. I was walking up the street, and around 27th Street and Lexington Avenue, I had this aroma come into my nose, and it smelled like curry. And I looked over, and there was a shop, and it was an Indian shop. Then beside it was another, and across the street was another. So I went into these shops, and they're big shops loaded with all forms of lentils and beans and herbs and seasonings. And I hadn't seen this variety before, not in any health food store. And I didn't know this stuff existed. It's Little India, and that's where the Indian people go to get their stuff. Inexpensive and enormous variety. And similarly, most people don't know how to eat rice or beans. They just have plain cooked rice. Well, that's boring. And plain beans. Well, that's even more boring. But if you're ever down in Costa Rica, Puerto Rico, in Trinidad, in Jamaica, wonderful dishes they make with these. Here's the good news. Rice and beans, in this major study published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, helps prevent diabetes. Not white rice, brown rice. Quote, people who eat more white rice over time had higher blood pressure, elevated levels of sugar, and harmful fats in their blood, as well as they had lower levels of the good cholesterol. But if they reversed it, if they ate brown rice and they had the beans, black beans, navy beans, saduki beans, black-eyed peas, lentils, split peas, yellow split peas, then they had more fiber, more protein, and lower glycemic levels. That meant that their blood sugar stayed lower, and that's good. And they took a whole country, in this case Costa Rica. And the more wealthier the people in Costa Rica, the more urbanized, the more they went away from brown rice to white rice. And they stopped eating the beans in the same levels. That's unfortunate. So here's the deal. If you want to prevent high blood pressure, prevent being overweight, prevent diabetes, prevent heart attacks and strokes, more rice and beans every single day. Now, I believe that we should be having on the low end 1 billion, on the high end 50 billion probiotics a day. You can divide it out over the day. Why? Because they help build even more good bacteria in the body. Now, this is supported by findings published in the British Journal of Nutrition. Here's what it says. Quote, probiotics show immune-boosting activity. The outcomes of this study, as well as data from previous studies, show that supplementing with these probiotic strains results in strengthening of various parts of the immune system. And that was from the director of the Health and Nutrition Division at the university. So this was also done at University of Milan and University of Southampton. So quite simply, make sure you're getting those live microorganisms into your body. I suggest using the non-dairy, because people say, yeah, you can get it from yogurt. But the reality is most people are getting a lot of sugar in their yogurt. It's made from dairy. A lot of people have problems with dairy. Most of it's not organic dairy. Hence, the cows have had bovine growth hormones. None of that is good. You can get a good probiotic supplement. Keep it in the refrigerator. And just take it each day. For those of you who have not been aware of how powerful exercise is, I just came from filming a group of individuals, about 42 individuals, who just completed a health support group. Today was their final day. And what we do is, on the very first day, they get up in front of a camera and they say, my name is, my age is, and here are the conditions that I have in my life. Then on the last day, they get up and they say, and here are the tests I've just had, blood pressure, cholesterol, whatever it may be, impedance, percentage of body fat, and here's what's changed. Now, today I had three separate people over the age of 70. Two were 78, one was 79. All of them had the same thing to report. Mind you, they're not related, they're just all in the same study. They all said that coming in 3 months ago to this health support group, they had memory loss, they had dementia, they couldn't sleep, their energy levels were very, very poor, constipation, digestive problems, they couldn't focus, they couldn't, they frequently weren't aware of even where they were at. One woman who I was speaking with said that she would sometimes, it would scare her, because she would be in a conversation and then realize she didn't remember a single thing that had been said up at that point in the conversation. She would walk into a room and not know why she was in that room. But now, just 3 months after making some lifestyle and behavior modification, she has reversed all that. All of them said that their memories are coming back, they have energy galore, they're sleeping less but are more rested, better digestion, better elimination. And one person said that his mother, who was 97, was having all kinds of problems with her diet that the doctor had her on, and she would sometimes go 3 or 4 weeks without a bowel movement. And then when she did have a bowel movement, she would cry and it would be painful and it'd be bloody. And he told the doctor, surely this isn't normal. People shouldn't have bloody evacuations and it shouldn't be this painful. And the doctor said, yeah, well, you know, that's the, you know, it happens as you get older. But then he began to put his mother on the same protocol that he was on. Lots of blueberries, raspberries, strawberries in the morning, with a whole grain cereal, and almonds and walnuts and pine nuts and pistachios, and lots of raw foods and juices like a garlic, ginger, celery, beet, and apple juice. And now he said he watched his mother, and her blood pressure came down, her dementia improved, her energy improved, but most importantly, no more painful, bloody bowel movements. So what was one of the most single important things that's in this protocol? Aerobic exercise. Every single day. It has been my experience in counseling tens of thousands of individuals one-on-one, as well as all the people in this audience, the feedback, collectively from tens of millions of people, that you really lose the weight, you really bring down your blood pressure, you make enormous improvements in your energy when you start to exercise. Now, I just read this morning. This is from Science Daily. This is from the Mayo Clinic Proceedings. I'll quote this verbatim. Aerobic exercise can reduce the risk of dementia. By the way, that's the very thing that these three people in this group had. Any exercise that gets the heart pumping may reduce the risk of dementia and slow the condition's progression once it starts. A reporting a Mayo Clinic study, researchers examined the role of aerobic exercise. That would be like power walking, jogging, bicycling. But realistically, for most people over the age of 60, power walking is going to be the most effective. A, because it doesn't hurt your joints. B, because it's easy to do. And C, a lot of neighborhoods are safe enough for people to walk in, or people even go to malls. In fact, before you see the shoppers in the malls in the morning, the malls open early and people go in there and power walk. So gym workouts, any kind of regular exercise. Now, how many different studies are there showing that when you exercise regularly, daily, you're going to help yourself? They found 1,600 scientific papers bearing directly on this issue. So if you want to slow down your cognitive decline, your memory loss, exercise every day. Baker's yeast can aid healing. This is a new study, and this is from Science Daily. And here's what it says. This was done at University Hospital in Oslo. It says, quote, wounds can be helped to heal faster. According to research done in Norway, beta-glucan, B-E-T-A-G-L-U-C-A-N, that comes from brewer's yeast. Beta-glucans have been called nature's super medicine. Norwegian researchers have been pioneering in producing these substances from the cell walls of everyday baker's yeast. Beta-glucans are now widely used in the aquaculture industry and veterinary medicine, as well as in dietary supplements. And the true potential of beta-glucans has barely been touched upon. And then they went into this particular study, and it says that there's an enormous amount of benefit. It can help fight infections, and it can help kill cancer cells in the body. Helps the body kill cancer cells. And so it helps your immune system and helps you heal from cuts and everything else. So make sure that you're getting some beta-glucan into your diet. Next up, potatoes reduce blood pressure in people who are overweight and have high blood pressure. How many people are we talking about here? Oh, let's say in the neighborhood of 55 to 60 million Americans are on medications for what is called post-staple hypertension, meaning they have high blood pressure and they're taking meds with very serious and debilitating side effects. And probably another 25 million, bringing up to 75 million Americans, have high blood pressure but don't know it because they're not checked. That's why it's called the silent killer. Now, this is the latest, and this is from the American Chemical Society. I'll quote this. The potato stereotype as a fattening food for health-conscious folk to avoid is getting another revision as scientists report that just a couple of servings of potatoes a day reduces blood pressure almost as much as oatmeal without causing weight gain. But don't reach for the ketchup, vinegar, or mayonnaise. The research was not done with French fries, America's favorite potato, but with potatoes cooked without oil. And so they used purple potatoes, but also red skin potatoes and white potatoes have similar effects. Quote, the potato, more than perhaps any other vegetable, has an underserved bad reputation that has led many health-conscious people to ban them from their diets. This is according to Dr. Vinson, the head researcher. Mention potato and people think fattening, high carbs, empty calories. In reality, when prepared without frying and served without butter, margarine, or sour cream, one potato has only 110 calories, but dozens of different phytochemicals and vitamins. So, in this case, they put a group of people who were overweight or obese and who had high blood pressure, and they had them eat 6 to 8 potatoes, about the size, small ones, about the size of a golf ball, with the skins twice a day for a month. And they used the purple potato because the pigment, or the coloring material in fruits and vegetables, is especially rich in beneficial phytochemicals. And what they found was that both systolic, the higher number in the blood pressure reading, like 120 over 80, and diastolic, the lower number, they dropped substantially. So, don't eat French fries or potato chips. Eat regular potatoes, steamed, good, stir-fried, that's fine, baked, that's still okay, and I would use some flaxseed oil, olive oil, almond oil, walnut oil, coconut oil. Those are all good organic cold-pressed oils to use on it. And then if you really want to make your potato more interesting, why not saute some white cap mushrooms, shiitake mushrooms, some garlic, and throw in some cayenne pepper, salt and sea salt, and then some black pepper, which has pepperine and is very good for you, and put that in. Makes it taste delicious. So potatoes, under a lot of criticism, but it's actually healing. And finally, for this segment, milk thistle provides a protective shield to the liver, the heart, and the brain. Now, historically, we've known, and having counseled thousands of drug addicts, that one of the very first things I do is try to rebuild and rejuvenate their liver, because once you've been taking drugs, your liver is shot. And it's the liver that has to get rid of all those toxic materials out of the body, as well as how to bring all the vitamins, nutrients, and enzymes into a form of ascorbic acid converted to ascorbate. It doesn't use vitamin B6, it uses pyridoxal 5-phosphate. So the liver is the organ that changes the structure so the cells actually use it. So healing the liver is crucial for every illness, and hence liver flushes, liver cleanse, liver detoxification. And milk thistle has always been important. It's actually called Silmarin, S-I-L-Y-M-A-R-I-M. Some say it's Silmarin, but it's pronounced both ways. You can say Silmarin or Silmarin. I prefer Silmarin. In any case, it's just commonly known as milk thistle. Now, here's the good news. This is from the peer-reviewed journal Hepatitis Monthly. It says, the liver is one of the most critical organs essential to human health. It serves more than 300 functions in the body to detoxify against chemical and environmental intrusions, and it promotes metabolic function as well. And now researchers have solid evidence that milk thistle extracts can halt and even reverse the effects of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, an affliction affecting as much as a third of the adult population. Supplementation with milk thistle will dramatically lower the risks associated with fatty liver disease, atherosclerosis, and cognitive dysfunction. Now, this non-alcoholic fatty liver is a significant health concern that is at an unprecedented rate due to obesity and diabetes epidemic currently gripping most of our society. The condition is caused in part by excess accumulation of fats, triglycerides, in the cellular matrix of the liver that result in suboptimal function of the organ. Left unchecked, you're going to end up injuring the cells, inflammation, and ultimately cirrhosis as the liver becomes less able to perform, and then you can die. So taking milk thistle is known to be a powerful cellular antioxidant. It turns off inflammation, and it can prevent excess oxidation and cholesterol from building up in there. So that's the latest. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to take a short music break, come back and say hello to Dr. Martin Feldman, who's going to give some new information about cholesterol. Please stay with us. To welcome all of you all across the world who are listening, I'm Gary Knoll. Each day, in fact, 14 hours a week over the Progressive Radio Network, but also heard on your local stations, non-commercial stations, I talk about health and healing. And for a long time, I stuck pretty much to health, disease, and environmental issues. But then I saw that we had to deal with the FDA and we had to deal with pharmaceutical companies that were giving us drugs we didn't need, that were hurting us, that were making diseases up like social anxiety disorder or math defiance disorder. And so I challenged that in the politics of suppression, meaning if you were a doctor using an alternative therapy that was healing people, they didn't care about that. They care about the fact that you could be doing something without medication, so you were acting out, so they went against all these doctors. So I had to deal with that. So over the years, the canvas that I'm working from has had to increase, and right now I'm dealing with helping to close down nuclear power plants, because what do you think is going to happen to your well-being if there's a nuclear accident and you happen to be in living in that area? Or the environment. How can we possibly be healthy if we're running out of water and we're running out of plantable soil? So more and more I'm focusing on social issues, addressing these so that we become proactive in protecting our health and the messages we get and our environment. Let's go over now and say hello to Dr. Martin Feldman. He is a board-certified neurologist. He practices holistic medicine, rarely, if ever, uses a medication, and he is an expert in what is called kinesiology, meaning the body can tell you, if you know how to work with it, what's wrong with it. And therefore, you can rebalance the body by listening to what the body says. And it's really magnificent, the field of kinesiology. And if you need then a follow-up orthodox diagnosis to see, would you whiz, how accurate was it, you can do that. But I've seen that it's almost always the body knows exactly what's wrong, whether it's viral, bacterial, parasitic, trauma. And when you're doing something right, it will let you know. When you're doing something wrong, it will let you know. That's what Marty uses. Nice to have you with us today, Marty.
Thanks, Gary. And I have a comment about the kinesiology. It's really an acupuncture derivative whereby acupuncture meridians have energy cycles. We can measure them electrically by a Vol machines, V-O-L-L, Dr. Vol machines called EAV, electroacupuncture by Vol. And many, many body functions can be assessed by that method, whereby electrical is the key as opposed to pure biochemical. But we can also short-circuit the needle on the meter and use the muscle as an output and do various energy fields on the body to see exactly what the wisdom of the body is going to tell us. And it's a profound movement forward. And hopefully all medicine eventually will move toward more of energy work and less purely biochemical work. But aside from that, we're talking now about cholesterol issues. First off, there's mania about cholesterol in America, and doctors are very, very frequently handing over Lipitor or others just across the board, very little thinking about what's going on. And it's true, cholesterol is an issue, but there's an issue I think that's even more important, or potentially more important, and that is this. Everybody should probably take some notes on this. We're talking about another measure of, we'll call it body function beyond cholesterol, and that is for inflammatory marker. And the main one we're talking about, and that's the one that really I think is very, very important, is called cardio-C-reactive protein. Cardio-C-reactive protein, also known as cardio-CRP, also known as highly sensitive CRP. It has three names, cardio-C-reactive P and others. It has a universal code number, a CPT number. Any laboratory in America can test this. Easy for the lab to do it. Any doctor can order the test, and it's CPT 86141. Universal code 86141. The cost of the test, if you have no insurance, through life extension is about $40. The labs may be a little bit above that, but it's not going to break your pocketbook. What about the number that comes back out? Well, we want that number, the cardio-C-reactive protein number, your specific result, to be below 1.5. Below 1.5 is the target. Above 3 is already getting to be pretty bad, pretty severe. It's a measure of how much inflammation we have, and we might say, well, is this how is this compared to cholesterol testing as a general concept? And I would say this. There are two major studies out there, and they're very important studies. The first one is called the Harvard Women's Health Study, and that study found that a CRP test was more accurate than cholesterol in predicting heart problems. In fact, CRP was the strongest risk predictor of 12 different markers of inflammation after 3 years of following the Harvard Women's Health Study. Next, the Physician's Health Study. It involved 18,000 relatively healthy physicians, if there is such a thing, at least that's how they describe it in the paper, found that those with elevated CRP levels had three times the risk of a heart attack than those with not elevated levels. We got two major studies showing the benefit of cardio-C-reactive protein. These could be presented to a physician if the doctor doesn't know what the test is, or is not eager to test it and doesn't have any idea what's going on. These two studies are out there to prove that this is an important test. What do we do about lifestyle regarding to get that CRP down if it's elevated, meaning you have inflammation in the body? You were talking before about aerobic exercise, and I think that wins the prize regarding the first level of lifestyle inflammation change regarding CRP, exercise aerobic. For sure, no alcohol, no tobacco, for sure. Weight control, the more pounds go on toward obesity, it tends to be more inflammation in the body. It's not a one-to-one correlation, but weight control will often bring down the CRP. Now, some person in the diet will eat fish, many won't. The omega-3s are also available as a supplement. If you don't want to eat fish in the diet, that's fine. For vegans, we have algae DHA. Algae is a non-fish source, of the special omega-3s, and DHA is one of the two major components. There's DHA and EPA. One of the DHA supplementary would be 1,000 to 1,500 milligrams a day. Now, if you have a high CRP, you have to use even more or less. Depends on what's going on, how much inflammation we've got to deal with. Commonly, part of the inflammation is from hidden food allergy. Very, very common and misused because traditional physicians have almost no interest or expertise in hidden food allergy testing. And it's a key issue for inflammation in general across the board. The first thing would be, what you can do on your own, would be elimination and reintroduction of the food for 6 to 10 days. For example, let's say you go off wheat, which you probably shouldn't eat to begin with, but let's say, just as an example, go off that wheat, strictly no wheat for 6 to 10 days. Have a meal of a ton of wheat at one setting, and see what happens if you have a reaction to that wheat at that mono meal. And if you have a reaction, that's a very, very good marker for wheat allergy. Can be done with any food. Next would be an IgG blood lab test. IgG, not IgE. It's not too good a test, but it's better than the IgE that's out there. IgG is superior to IgE, but not perfect. Very few physicians know what IgG blood test is all about, and it requires a special laboratory. It's way in the background. You can do a few things on your own to remove your allergic burden. First would be a HEPA level air purifier. Reduce allergens in the home. Next would be for sure to control any mold introduction in the home, any mold problems in the bathroom. Got to clean that up. Very, very important. Those molds give inflammation in the body eventually. We've got some supplements that we might use. There are many, many, many anti-inflammatory supplements. I'll just list a few for, say, overview. Boswellia, turmeric, very, very important. Turmeric, ginger, white willow bark, cayenne pepper, lemon bioflavonoid, and bromelain. These are very, very effective non-drug supplements which can bring down inflammation. You got to somewhat tailor it to your own specific body function, but those are out there as possibilities. Also, while we're at it, we really should test one other test for inflammation. If it's a true inflammatory issue where the CRP is high, we might then look at homocysteine. Homocysteine, CPT, the universal code for homocysteine, would be A3090, homocysteine is another marker of inflammation. And the other thing I would also do if there's inflammation would be a vitamin D level test. Vitamin D level is out there. It's accurate. It's doable. And it should be the vitamin D25-hydroxy. Exactly what I said, vitamin D25-hydroxy. Universal code CPT number 82306. 82306. Want that level up toward 50 at least. Vitamin D, want to bring it up toward 50, will help with inflammation. So we have here a marker. In many ways, an adjunct, or even in certain ways, better than the cholesterol, you need to do both. But it's not appreciated by traditional medicine yet, although it's out there as a test. You've got to ask the doctor to do it. And you got to know you want to be below 1.5. And I think it's a very, very important issue.
Very good information, Marty. Dr. Martin Feldman can be reached at his office at 212-744-4413. Marty, you also were present today when the people got up to give their final statements of what had occurred. What were some of your observations?
As you said, there were roughly 40 people there. Amazing. The main thing I think the most universal help was with energy. Second was, I would say, weight. Next was aspects of personal environment, they clean up their environment, and especially toxicity of relationships were improved. Lifestyle, especially exercise, was increased. Some people had blood markers. Man with diabetes had his glucose level come way down. We had many people had medical issues, specific medical issues, arthritis, even autoimmune issues, various problems of true, we'll call it, medical diagnoses, which were not helped by traditional medicine at all or minimally. So this was an astounding group, 40-some-odd, great, great report. It's on your videos. It's there for the doctors who don't believe us.
Yeah, I'll post it. One of the people that stood out for me was the 78-year-old African-American male who said that he was in a hospital a year ago and had a whole cup of medicines he had to take, but having listened to the show but not actualizing, he knew there was alternative ways. So he joined this group, and hence he found the medications didn't work, causing side effects, so he got rid of all of them, and he dropped over 100 points in his blood sugar, resting blood sugar. He now says it's between 88 and 101, which is terrific. He's off insulin for his diabetes. He'd been diabetic for a long time. So to take a man who is near 80 years of age, who's been on insulin, and then to get him off of that and get their blood sugar, fasting blood sugar normal, that is in and of itself. But he also said that he had lost weight, he has more energy, and his eye pressure was 44, which is very bad. And it now is down to 16, and he said that when the ophthalmologists were talking to him about, they didn't know how he could even see when both eyes were 44, and now both eyes are 16. So we dropped from 44 to 16, and now he has his vision back, and that means we reduced all that oxidative stress and rebuilt the tissue in the eye. As far as its antioxidant loads and glutathione loads. And that was, I thought, one of the more remarkable people that we heard from today.
Yes, there was a man with his diabetes. Amazing.
Yes. So, and every single one, as you said, improved in their energy. So I was very impressed with the results of this group. And this was an older group. It's not easy working with older people. For many reasons, and I discussed that at the beginning of the meeting for an hour, about we all want change. That excites us. But then we don't want to do it ourselves. We want to watch someone else change. We want to be a passive spectator to see what happens when people make change, but it makes us feel too uncomfortable and creates apprehension and stress, the idea of giving up things we're used to, even if those things are bad for us, like coffee. Or our evening snacks, which then keep us up, you know, so we don't get a good night's sleep. So as a first step, I felt that this was very positive. So I came away feeling that we had made a difference. You had made a difference. Luann Panessi had made a difference. And so the people, motivated by these twice-monthly meetings, begin a new life. So thanks a lot, Marty, for your participation in that.
My pleasure. I learned myself from the audience.
And by the way, Dr. Martin Feldman, not only did he come from an ultra-Orthodox background, having published 66 peer-reviewed journals in journals of neurology, and a professor at Mount Sinai in neurology, and board-certified in neurology, and qualified in psychiatry, but he and I have completed about 48 clinical studies together. I don't know anyone else in the United States that's done 48 studies on lifestyle modification. If there is someone, good. But that's how many we've done. And we present our information. We flew down out to Chicago to present at the World Congress on Anti-Aging Medicine before about 7,000 scientists. We were one of the keynote papers selected. Another paper of ours was selected on a different subject for Washington, D.C. on the American Academy of Anti-Aging Scientists. There were about 4,000 scientists there. So we were invited all over the world to present the results because no one else is doing these studies and they're not getting the results. And these are all highly qualified objective studies. We have before and after blood works, medical monitoring, blood pressures. We have everything. Plus they keep diaries. And so, but it hasn't broken into the mainstream. And it won't. Because official news and official medicine and official media do not allow anything that does not align with their views. If you told them you could help a person who's diabetic get off insulin, they're going to say not possible. And they're absolutely right. They couldn't do it. Very easy for us to do. We've done it so many times. And now what I've done is I film every group before and after, split the screen so you see them on day one, you see them whether it's 3 months, 6 months, or a year later, and in their own words, uncoached, they tell you what's changed. And then we have the backup medical documentation to verify it. So that's what's exciting, and that we can prove it. And I'm going to start putting more of these up on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, including people who were where we've helped them reverse multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's, various cancers, end stage. You name the conditions, we've helped them. And so this is exciting. Now, in a moment, we're going to come back and take on cholesterol, the whole cholesterol story in lay language. So all of you who know of anyone who may have problems with elevated cholesterol, especially the bad LDL cholesterol, you'll know what to do. And this could help get people off meds or prevent them from going on and certainly can extend their life. Because when you have an elevated cholesterol, you will die from all causes sooner than if you did not. So we believe in extending a life. Back in a moment. Welcome all of you, I'm Gary Knoll. Let's talk about cholesterol, because most Americans, including doctors, are victims of a mass campaign against substance produced by our bodies. Cholesterol is a steroid that is essential for the maintenance of the body's cells. It's not necessarily the monster we have been led to believe that it is. It helps the liver digest fats and works with protein and lecithin to transport fats through our blood. Not only that, but cholesterol helps manufacture important male and female sex hormones. In addition, cholesterol helps keep skin moist. Cholesterol is so important that if not enough comes from the food, the liver manufactures it. It is so essential that unless it is oxidized, it is produced daily to build the membranes of new cells that must be formed in place of dead cells and dying cells. Now, most of us think of cholesterol as a type of fat, but it's not. It's really a type of alcohol called a steroid alcohol or sterol. Now, normally, most cholesterol is found in cells. Only a small amount is found in the blood. Doctors don't worry about cholesterol in the cells, but when levels in the blood get high, the substance can clog arteries and put a strain on the heart. The serum cholesterol level, that is between 125 and 200 milligrams per 100 milliliters of blood, is generally a safe one, in my opinion. Opinions on this differ widely, though. Some experts say that 175 cholesterol is high. Others place the acceptability cutoff at 275. You should discuss this with your own practitioners, but I believe anywhere from 125 to 175 is fine. 200, you're really pushing the upper limits, and I would say you're actually getting close to that minefield. The cholesterol number alone is not enough to say that a potentially dangerous situation exists. It is almost impossible to understand this unless you test triglycerides, lipoprotein levels, as part of a regular SMAC24 blood test. These are inexpensive, easy to do, non-painful. An elevated triglyceride level indicates a poorly functioning liver or pancreas. And that's dangerous because triglycerides are blood fats, and they do play a role in clogging the arteries with harmful plaque. And lipoproteins are compounds composed of fat and protein. And particular interest to the health conscious are high density lipoproteins, or HDLs. And the bad LD lipoproteins, low density lipoproteins, the LDLs. Now, the good high density lipoproteins are low in cholesterol and high in phospholipids, and are considered the best that we can have, especially by heart specialists, because they lessen the chance of heart disease. Having too many of the bad LDL, on the other hand, are what should be of concern. LDLs, the low-density lipoproteins, contain very elevated levels of cholesterol and have a tendency to stick to the walls of arteries and build up as plaque. Too many LDLs, therefore, increase the risk of atherosclerosis, which, as you know, listening to this program over the years, is a condition in which the arterial walls are damaged by cholesterol and result in normal blood flow being blocked. Now, an important factor to consider when testing cholesterol is the ratio of HDL versus the total serum cholesterol levels. Ratios of 4 to 1 or better, the first number is lower than the 4, are desirable. So what do you do? Okay, well, dependence on cholesterol-lowering medications is unnecessary and unsafe, in my opinion. Plus, many have very toxic side effects. Unless a person suffers from a rare genetic disorder called hypercholesterolemia, where high blood cholesterol levels begin at birth, there are safer, more natural ways to keep cholesterol levels down. For example, eating less of the cholesterol-containing foods would seem to be a good approach, and indeed the goal of lowering high cholesterol intake has received a lot of good publicity in recent years. The problem is that cutting out eggs, steak, and dairy products does not necessarily correct high blood cholesterol, while cutting down on fatty foods is an excellent suggestion, no matter who you are, no matter what background, no matter what nationality. We shouldn't be eating all these high-level saturated fats. First of all, you don't need them. And this approach alone may not be sufficient for lowering cholesterol. Because remember what I said, cholesterol is produced by your liver. The body may respond to a sharp reduction in cholesterol by manufacturing more of its own. And the body can make anywhere from 14, 15, 1600 milligrams of cholesterol a day. That's about six times more than what we normally eat. It's interesting to note that certain ethnic groups, like the Maasai tribes of Africa, the Eskimos, have high cholesterol diets and yet have low serum cholesterol levels and few indications of heart disease. So we can't just say cholesterol per se. We also have to look at nutritional status, genetics, exercise, age, and triglycerides. So let's start with the diet, because that's something we can all pay attention to. Instead of cutting out cholesterol-rich foods completely, a better approach might be to add more fiber. Why? Roughage, or fiber, increases the speed at which the body eliminates cholesterol. Now, what's at the top of my list? Pectin. You heard me mention earlier in the program about blueberries. Well, blueberries, along with apples, give you pectin, and grapes give you pectin, and that's that soft, gelatinous material. And that's really good for moving food through the intestine, but also cholesterol. Also, how about some of the old-fashioned hot grain cereals like rolled oats and oat bran and barley and buckwheat in the morning? That's also helpful. And adding pectin-rich apples, just eating them through the day, or chopping them up and putting them in a cereal, or making an apple juice, all that is good. And it's especially important to have 4 to 6 grams, 4 to 6 grams of soluble fiber from as pectin and guar gum and psyllium before eating any meal high in fat. Now, there's a lot of different types of ways of getting this, and another interesting finding is that a small amount of polyunsaturated fat may lower serum cholesterol levels by up to 10%. It is called linoleic acid, linoleic, linoleic acid. Where do you get that? You get that in cold water fish. You get it in almonds, pistachios, pine nuts, macadamia nuts, sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, and sesame seeds. You get it in the nut butters, which is a great way of getting it too, and these are really good for you. You also have a nutrient that's a superstar. It's called polycosinol. Poly, P-O-L-I, cos, C-O-S, and all, A-N-O-L, polycosinol. That comes from natural sugar cane, and it contains octocosinol, an alcohol found in the wax-like coating of fruits and leaves, and study shows that polycosinol normalizes cholesterol as well as or better than do drugs. It also hinders arterial lesions from developing, prevents the bad LDL cholesterol oxidation, which destroys blood vessels, and inhibits clot formation, and hence helps prevent abnormal platelet aggregation that could lead to a stroke. Millions of Americans across the globe use polycosinol, and I would suggest one tablet twice a day with meals, morning and evening, generally around 10 milligrams. Then you have another superstar to lower your cholesterol. It's artichoke leaf extract. It has some very impressive cholesterol-lowering advantages. In the number of studies, artichoke leaf extract has been shown to actually restrict cholesterol synthesis, an effect that persists for hours following initial exposure. A supplement about 300 milligrams of artichoke leaf extract can be taken 3 times a day. Then you have something that is used all over the world, but rarely in the United States, garlic. The benefits of garlic are undeniable. Studies have shown that garlic can reduce cholesterol, protects the arterial linings from damage caused by oxidation, but most importantly, garlic prevents thrombosis, the cause of arterial blood clots and the main reason for strokes and heart attacks. I would suggest about 5 to 10,000 milligrams of garlic a day. That's about 5 to 10 grams a day, or about 1/3 of an ounce a day. Now, also use curcumin, C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N, curcumin, otherwise known as turmeric root, into your diet. It's an ancient spice. It's been proven to cause significant cholesterol drops in a matter of days. And like garlic, turmeric also helps to inhibit the formation of abnormal blood clots. I would say 1 to 5,000 milligrams of curcumin a day. Another nutrient that I would add in there is something we don't use almost ever here. It's derived from the resin of a certain type of North Indian tree. It's called Gugulipid. G-U-G-U-L-I-P-I-D, Gugulipid. Gugulipid is very good at about 150-milligram dose once or twice a day. Then add in green tea, also lowers different forms of cholesterol. I would suggest 300 to 1,000 milligrams a day of the green or black or white or red tea. Now, if you're not vegan, then fish oil can reduce triglycerides by at least a third on average, and especially beneficial for turning off inflammation in your arterial walls and the epithelium. And use it with garlic, and you have a really 1-2 combination. But if you get upset stomach, which sometimes happen, you may want to use perilla oil instead. P-E-R-I-L-L-A. Perilla oil is a relatively new essential fatty acid source, and it's much easier for the gastrointestinal tract to digest, and it lowers triglycerides. Vitamin B6, pyridoxine, at about 100 milligrams is good. Lecithin-rich soy products like tofu, tempeh, miso, that's also good from non-genetically engineered soy. And then phytochemicals, meaning lots of green vegetables, lots of red fruits. Then specific supplements that can help you with your cholesterol and get it under control. Niacin, that's vitamin B3, is important for cholesterol control and can be found in a variety of foods. But generally, supplementation is best, anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams to really get the cholesterol down, but get a non-flush niacin. And it can also help lower triglycerides as well as cholesterol and to raise the beneficial HDL levels. And always use niacin at higher doses cautiously, because if you have a history of gout or liver dysfunction or diabetes, it could actually cause a liver toxicity. Not at lower doses, higher dose, yes. And people with hepatitis should not take niacin at all. And when taking niacin in doses exceeding 1,000 milligrams, liver enzymes should be monitored every 6 months. And then one of vitamin C's many wonders is that it helps to lower cholesterol. Anywhere from 1,000 to 10,000 milligrams of buffered vitamin C per day. And you may need more in cold winter months. You may need more if you're sick or under stress. I would use it with bioflavonoids, especially rutin, R-U-T-I-N, and quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N. And when combined with lecithin, vitamin C helps to dissolve arterial plaques. So that's always good. And vitamin E, 400 to 800 units from mixed tocopherols, and then throw in about 200 units of tocotrienols. I already mentioned that vitamin B6, but use it with methionine, and that can balance triglyceride levels. And then studies reveal that the best cholesterol-lowering minerals are chromium, calcium, and magnesium, zinc, and selenium. General selenium is at 200 micrograms. And then herbs, ginger, cayenne, they decrease liver production of cholesterol and triglycerides, and lots of garlic, that also lowers cholesterol and thins the blood, lessening the chance of dangerous blood clots, and then exercising. If you were to exercise aerobically for 1 hour a day, power biking, power walking, you would do a tremendous amount of good. Many people replace cholesterol-rich foods with artificial ones, fake eggs, margarines, imitation bacon, non-dairy cream, but there's no evidence any of these fake foods prevent heart attacks and helps at all, so I would not use these. And many medications, including steroids and contraceptives, increase cholesterol and triglyceride levels and destroy the nutrients needed for maintaining normal levels. In fact, studies reveal that people on steroid medications have 50% increase in blood cholesterol levels. So just remember, when you're on birth control or you're taking steroids, you are playing Russian roulette with your health. So between ginger and garlic and curcumin and gugu lipid and artichoke extract and green tea and soy protein and Ganoderma mushrooms and vitamin C and zinc and soluble fibers, especially pectin, and berries and hot cereals. Oh yeah, you can get your cholesterol down easily. I'm Gary Knoll. Now, I'm looking at the clock, and it looks like we've just about run out of time. So I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen. And just remember that a few years ago, let's say 5 years ago, when you went to listen to radio, you really had a few venues. You had conservative radio, liberal radio, which most people had to find a home on because that's where most people listen to radio, aside from music radio. And then up came some of the Liberty radios and Patriot radios, but people didn't pay much attention to them, certainly not mainstream. They were too extreme. And then I started progressive radio. I remember people said, "What is progressive radio?" And I said, "Well, it's people who first think independently, who pride themselves in being able to use reason, who look at a problem without just reacting and want solutions. They want solutions that help themselves and everyone else as well. And they're coming with a healing mind to all subjects, not an adversarial mind." And if you go up today and you Google conservative radio, there are all the people, Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck, and they have a lot of people listening, about 40 million, 41 million. And then Google liberal radio, and there's all the Tom Hartmans and all the liberal individuals who support their liberal position on that in the different shows. And then NPR and Pacifica. But then Google progressive radio. And gee whiz, as of this morning, it was 93 million. That means that 93 million people chose to go to progressive radio to find voices that were not limited by ideology, that were more healing, that were more open, and that were willing to take their time and look at an issue from a multiple points of view. And on progressive radio, we're number one. So I want to thank all of you for, without any ads and no PR whatsoever, just word of mouth, getting 91 million people on Google search engine to look under progressive radio more than conservative and liberal radio combined. How about that for silent revolution? Have a nice day, everyone.